Hello, I'm Ian Willicks. In 1995, to mark the 30th anniversary of the end of the American War in Vietnam, I travelled the length of the country from Hanoi in the north to the tunnels of Cu Chi in the south with photographer Tim Page. Barely 19, Page stumbled into Vietnam in the early 1960s, just as the war was hotting up. He found ready work as a photographer, with a reputation for taking risks. One writer said he was the most extravagant of the wigged-out crazies running around Vietnam. Dennis Hopper portrayed him in Apocalypse Now. Page's career as a war photographer came to an abrupt end in 1969 at the tunnels of Cu Chi. This is how he remembers it.
Vietnam makes me feel like a junkie moth. Well, I keep on going back to the horror of the burn of the flame.
From Saigon, ladies and gentlemen, the beat goes on.
There'll be Saigas, Kamas, Natas, Quinas, Quangas, Dangas, and Hue Beside the Sea. Good morning, Vietnam. This is Tim Page. We're rolling south on the Unification Express, going to Hue, going south. Canned heat is kind of synonymous with napalm, miniguns, gunships, like laying pee on Charlie. Charlie used to be the enemy. He's now our friend. We're trying to be normalized.
Well, I saw Paddock Brown, but I'm out on the road again. I'm on the road again. Well, I'm so tired of crying, but I'm out on the road again. I'm on the road again.
Since the whole of the countryside was pot was blighted with what the Vietnamese aptly call Ho Bom, bomb craters. They've had the onerous task of having to fill in these eyesores which litter their countryside, and over the years, more in the south than the north, they've planted bananas in the bottom of the craters to allow the detritus from the banana plants to gradually form a tilth in the crater, and the crater fills up. But within the first 7 or 8 years of liberation, they had gangs of people out laboriously trying to fill up all these holes in the paddy fields. Where do you get the dirt to fill in a crater when it's been blown halfway across the planet?
From Saigon, ladies and gentlemen, the beat goes on.
Tell you a story.
Forces Radio, 24 hours of Good Morning Vietnam music. Except I have to admit that from 6 to 7 o'clock in the morning until some people got radically hold of the radio station, there was a polka hour for the old lifers, and there was 2 hours of country and western music for the rednecks. In the later 60s, when there started to be race problems between the black and the black GIs and the white GIs, there was a lot more soul music on the radio. And then there's a general who called in who objected to Jose Feliciano's Star Spangled Banner. And so they stuck on Hendrix's Star Spangled Banner. And this kind of blew the brass off his hat.
Explosive.
whoever in their right mind is going to go to a place where large chunks of explosive metal is coming out of the air at you? You go with the flow. Because the more you worry, the more you're going to be nervous, which means you're going to be dangerous, because you're taught. You could be in a firefight and be 100 foot from what you know is the most dramatic life-death experience played out. You will have, like, a group of three guys being hit by machine gun fire, holding out around an anthill, grenades rolling. You can't get to them. It would serve no purpose ending up in their position as dead meat. So you don't. I mean, you try to figure out the best way to stay so nobody sees you. You can see everybody and take pictures. But the first time it happens, you're like a frantic chicken. I mean, you pee.
There's a Viet Cong machine gun in there, about 100 yards away. They're trying to get it with gunships. In case the men should try to flee into the street.
AFBN News on the hour. Good evening. Here's the news. Army Specialist John Aubuchon reporting. This morning here in Saigon, the Viet Cong made an attempt to seize the United States Embassy. They failed. The entire 19-man enemy force was killed. Four United States military police were killed.
Just checked into the Bac Dong Hotel, which is on the Song Hong River in downtown Da Nang, almost dead center of Vietnam, twixt Ho Chi Minh and Hanoi. This strange building has had a rather glorious history. It started life way back in the French times as one of the French customs posts, and then as the Americans came ashore, it became a massive honky-tonky zone. And then it became the press centre of Da Nang. We kind of took over facilities that the military had left behind with an alacrity, it's not to be described. And in the final few days that Da Nang was still the Southern Republic, it became the American consul, a scene of mass panic as Da Nang was evacuated, as up to 1.5 million old regime soldiers flocked down from the northern battlefields and try to get out of here. There were barges overloaded with thousands of people on the quay just across to our right, and dead children lining the quayside, and bodies and clothes and abandoned cars being pushed into the water. And there were some famous pictures shot as the Americans left Da Nang of them cramming people into the aeroplanes, trying to get back to Saigon.
But I heard a
here it was frites and steak, crème caramel, hot and cold running, clap. The rooms cost a mere $2 a night, and you could feed for a dollar a day, besides getting sea rations off the military for nothing. And the air base was 3 kilometres away, on the outskirts of town, where you could buy a carton of cigarettes for a dollar and a bottle of cognac for $5. And a roll of film was a dollar. And you were making 100 a day with a bit of luck. I suspect we lived the life of old Riley when I look back at it with the distance of emotions perdu.
Sitting in the morning sun, I'll be sitting when the evening comes, watching the ships roll in, and then I'll watch them roll away again. Yeah, I'm sitting on a dock of a bay, wasting time.
Dock of the Bay, sitting on China Beach, Pacific side of the South China Sea, overlooking the Tonkin Gulf. Thirty years ago, this would have been a scene full of Marines on in-country R&R and guys who had drifted up from the helicopter base just down the beach here about a click. Lifeguards in lifeguard towers, gunships clattering back and forth, going back to roost after a day strafing Charlie up in the hills. And the Marines provided for the press, or for officers, lightning dinghies, surfboards, and happy hour where you could get a flash frozen steak just delivered from America that morning, and a cold beer for $1.50. Right behind where we're sitting now, this is the old R&R Centre, in-country R&R Centre. During the war, the Germans, for reasons beyond my ken, parked a hospital ship on the river here to deal with the civilian casualties. It was staffed by all these marvellous buxom blonde fraulein who would disport themselves in the surf with some very heavy black marines, machine gunners, just looking for some heavy pussy straight off the mountains. So you would watch this frivolity in the surf with the black and the Germans, rent your surfboard, your lightning dinghy, smoke your weed and have your BBQ and your happy hour. This was a heavy day in Da Nang. We've now climbed 186 steps. And we've arrived in the sacred grotto, which is inseted in top of Marble Mountain, which is 10 kilometres south of Da Nang. It's during the war that we used to bike out here on a Honda or a trail bike and sit and meditate. And it was one of the few zones in the whole of the madness and the horror that you could find a certain tranquility, a certain semblance of peace, a certain sense of self-centering. I used to come out here, I can't exaggerate, fairly regularly with Sean Flynn, Errol Flynn's son, and we used to sit on these steps. There would be nobody here. Half the time it was a Viet Cong clinic, hospital and rear area zone, overlooking literally half a kilometre away a massive US Marine base. And I came back here in 1989 and sat exactly in the same place that one used to sit back during those nostalgia days and gazed upon the Buddha. And there were this incredible beams, rays pissing down from the top of the grotto. And it seemed as if somehow Flynn's spirit, his whole id, was suspended in this cave. And it was as if we were conversing and no time had gone since his disappearance back in 1970 on April the 6th in Cambodia. And there were no people here then. And I walked down and lit some incense. And seemed to have touched his soul. It was after that particular trip back in 89 that I arrived home in Kent and literally found on my desk a sheath of declassified documents relating to Dana and Sean's disappearance in Cambodia back in the 70s and their eventual demise, which was over a year later in the Khmer Rouge heartland of northern Kampong Chom province in eastern Cambodia. A battalion of tourists have vacated the space. There seems to be a certain peace returning to it.
When the boss was closing doors.
The inroad to China Beach today is going through a complete doi moi of ferro-concrete, army-financed mini-hotels and café. The beachfront itself is shackville. We have, at best, rattan mats, coconut mats, bamboo poles, and what would pass in Cambodia for a refugee village. They don't even have a decent drop of coffee down here, although they do provide nook chan lemon, glass of sugar, and a pot of hot tea. Now, I figure our own trip out there. This is very good after coming out the water. Hot lemon tea. No? Get all the salt out your face. No? One tries to be as civilized as possible in a minimalistic way. I must grow up and get a job. Bang.
Drinking tinnies in the Grand Hotel on a 36-hour wreck leave in Bung Tao. And I can still hear Frankie lying screaming in the jungle till the morphine came and killed the bloody row. And the Anzac legends didn't mention mud and blood and tears. And the stories that my father told me never seemed quite real. I caught some pieces in my back that I didn't even feel. God help me, I was only 19. And can you tell me, doctor, why I still can't get to sleep? And why the Channel 7 chopper chills me to my feet? And what's this rash that comes and goes? Can you tell me what it means? God help me, I was only 19.
And when you're 20 years old, this is a lovely beach. I hadn't had no education. I didn't know what I was supposed to be doing in life. I was here. It's a lovely place to be. And right behind there is a helicopter waiting to take you up and make you money. There's always something going on when you've got that many troops. There's always something to be gotten. But even Kappa points out, how much time do you really want to be out in the field? You didn't have to go out that often to get pictures. Each operation will give you 2 or 3 pictures. You use up a lot of real time when you go out in the field. Although you've only been out for 2-3 days or whatever it happens to be. In terms of your lifespan, you've used up 2 weeks. It's intense out there. You're cagey the whole time because you don't know if it's going to be a booby trap, you don't know if there's a sniper around, some fool gunner's fired a short round, incoming friendly, you don't know if there's an airstrike going to happen, You don't know if Charlie has decided that day he's going to hit you. It's all up to him. It was very rare that we initiated something. He initiated it. And these are smart people. Waitlisted. Somehow the Vietnamese time warp has caught up with the whole thing. But here we are at Da Nang Airport, watching ground staff climb coconut trees right outside the new terminal. This used to be 12th Aerial Port, where Marines came and went, and the Air Force came and bombed, where troops stormed ashore, and where today the odd Tupolev and Aleutian comes in and out to Haiphong and Ho Chi Minh. It used to be said that all you needed was a couple of J's and a tail number, and just go out in the flight line and taxi. Back then, there was no check-in. There were no orders. There was occasionally a manifest. You would drift up to a desk and some rather disillusioned Air Force tech sergeant or some Spec 4 in some woebegone transport unit would assign you a tail number, and you would wander off down the flight line amidst the whirring props and turbos and find your plane and hopefully your destination. As Don Wise said, it would be Saigas, Kammers, Natas, Quinners, Quangers, Dangers and Hue Beside the Sea as the milk run progressed up slowly through the country.
Ladies and gentlemen, we will be landing shortly. Please ensure that the seatbelt is securely fastened. Once more, we remind you to put the seat back upright and secure the table in front of you. Thank you.
We're coming into Tonsignyat Airport, erstwhile home to the American 7th Air Force, and we'll be landing any moment in Ho Chi Minh, the new name for Saigon. We're on the final approach as we talk, coming in over Binh Hoa, another old airbase north of the city. The Continental Hotel, slap in the middle of Saigon, with its famous terrace, the shelf, the Continental Shelf, where reputedly Graham Greene penned the notes for The Quiet American, possibly still the quintessential novel of Vietnam, which was never bombed because the Viet Minh, the Viet Cong, the Americans, the French all gathered and wined and dined here. In one corner you had transvestites, in another corner eyeing the transvestites, American construction engineers, a table of would-be journalists, of MacV people, of Chuzmag. It was the Star Wars bar of the 60s and the 50s and the 40s and the 30s. In fact, it is the quintessential bar.
You can check out any time you like, but you can never leave.
The tunnels of Kuchi. We're about to plunge into the labyrinth of tunnels they claim to have dug extensively right under the 25th Division base back during the 60s when they controlled this area, which is right flush on the Cambodian border. In 1980, this is a defoliated wasteland, sort of like out of the Sinai after the Six-Day War. Now it's scrub jungle. We are sitting in designated tourist village with arcades of war souvenir shops and boutiques. Seems to be a weird change of time. The tourists today are the kids of Vietnam who weren't born when the war ended. The population has virtually doubled since 1975 in April when the tanks went through the gates of the palace in Saigon. And now these kids are out here to try to see their heritage. Well, we're in a very hot underground log roof, stucco-walled somewhat fixed up Euro Disney bunker. This is the supposedly the vice commander's rabbit hole in Warren. It's where the big bunny lived and functioned from. There's a hole beneath us here which is goes down through a sort of trap, and you can scuttle off into the distance and emerge 25 kilometers later and pop up in an American golf course, shoot an American general golfing. I think it'll come to this. I mean, the amount of tourists here at the moment is overwhelming. Plus, in fact, down here it is stinking hot, sticky, and doesn't really portray the scorpions, the red ants, and all the other sundry things that the tunnel rats had to face back in their heyday trying to chase Victor through this labyrinth of insanity. But on planet Earth, it's very sticky and hot down here. There's a sound system. Hold on. We want to go carbine, we want to go 16 or AK-47. Should we go for the 47? Okay. They're going to rush us a buck a pop. Every cap you pop is $1. Should we go for a full clip? Okay. I suspect it's very uncool, very unhip to actually admit to like pop caps. There's something about the feel of a weapon on rock and roll, fully automatic, that punching sort of recoil into the shoulder, the smell of cordite, the whiff of the edge, the whiff of the horror of the power that speaks from the barrel of a gun. Keeps you on your toes, keeps your eardrums numb, makes you think about the whole ism of life and death, and is it sort of uncomic to be popping caps on the Coochie Range once again? Ride back down a road that I never got to ride the last time, and yet the ghosts of that horror seem now reduced to a funny line of take a right and hit a mine. I drove out to pick up a chopper that morning back on April 19th, 1969. I had to sit down to pick up two guys who got hit by a bouncing Betty and need dust off. And we get out to help the dudes, and that's when Charlie presses next command detonated treat. And the sergeant, who was the prescribed 3 paces in front to reduce blast factor should you hit something, sailed 50 feet in the air and lost both his legs. And a belt of M16 ammo cooked off around his waist. And I was 3 meters behind him, so he walked into this kind of interesting archaeological collection of Detroit steel. And don't remember too much, except I did change lenses. I shot at least 3 or 4 more images. And staggered like some sort of chicken about to become a pot of soup back to the helicopter. And don't remember too much more until I was being taken down into the sanctums of a medical bunker out at Coochie, where we've just come from. And a guy mumbling something about he's got 20 minutes to live.
But it's gotta be changed, yes it has. It's gotta be changed, yes it has. I open my eyes once more. I breathe again. I walked again. I was 10 times stronger. They give it back to me. I'm gonna give it back to you. Life is too precious. Life is priceless. Life goes on and on, Lord. Never stop. Never stop, no, no. It just goes on and on and on and on and on. I've gotta change that road. I gotta build me a new road. We can walk that road together, hand in hand, yeah. Hand in hand, Lord. Hand in hand, we move.
I've forgotten the pain, the nightmares of long gone. I don't wake up with vivid screaming jets. It doesn't bother me. It's hard to remember the pain. I think we have a lot of problems remembering what pain actually felt like. That's why it's pain, because it surprises us eternally. I didn't think that pain could be that bad.
One of these mornings. You're gonna rise loud and sing it. You're gonna spread your wings, shine your tail, take to the sky, Lord, the sky. Nothing's going to harm you now. Na 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 na. Don't you cry. Don't you cry.
War seems very distant. Every year on Remembrance Sunday, I try to go and photograph a war memorial. I find the ceremony very moving. It brings tears to my eyes. It gives you a space to cogitate upon friends, comrades, people you know who are killed violently. It's part of the pain, I guess. How to mourn with hope.
Bỏ mặc căn nhà, bỏ mặc tôi, bỏ mặc nơi đây, bỏ mặc người, bỏ trăm năm sau, ngàn năm nữa, bỏ mặc tôi là. Tôi là ai? Em đi bỏ lại con đường bờ xa cỏ dại vô thường nhớ em. Ra đi em đi bỏ lại dặm trường ngàn dấu khô buồn trùng nhớ thêm. Bỏ mặc vui buồn, bỏ mặc ai, bỏ mặc chắn không, bỏ mặc người, bỏ tôi hoang vu và nhỏ bé, bỏ mặc tôi.
This is Deddington On Air. You've been listening to Page in Vietnam, first transmitted by the Canadian Broadcasting Corporation in 1995, produced by Ian Willicks for Partners in Sound. Tim Page is now Adjunct Professor of Photojournalism at Griffith University, Brisbane, Australia.